Yud Gimel Sivan, Wednesday the 15th of June, Rabbi Svi Belovsky, Espionage and the Court Jester, an Ishbit's Approach to the Meraglim.
Good morning.
This parasha, titled Shalach, contains a well-known narrative with a possibly sub-narrative lying behind it, which may throw new light on the structure of the parasha. So let's begin. Shalach Lecha Anoshim, the famous discussion between Rashi and the Ramban as to what exactly is going on at the beginning of the parasha, who's at fault, whose responsibility it is. So let's just remind ourselves of what's going on. Shalach Lecha, Rashi says, Ladatecha, quoting the Midrash, it's up to you. The Datchom means you're doing it of your own accord. Ani Einem Savalecha. God says, I'm not instructing you. Obviously based on the word Lecha. What's Lecha about? If you want to, you can send them. And it bases on the Midrash are based on the account of Moshe's account at the beginning of Devarim, and how that squares with the presentation of the text here. Moshe Nimlach B'Shechina. Moshe is evident from the Pesukim in Devarim that he consulted with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Ani Amarti Lohem Shitoivo. I've said to you that the land is good. I've already said before. Hayehem Shani Nois Nohem Mochem Litois B'Divriam Raglim Leman L'Yoshua. You know, if you want to do it, go ahead and do it. But it's providing a space, providing a way in which things will go wrong, in which they'll find a reason not to want to go ahead, and they'll end up, through the Meraglim, not inheriting the land. I mean, that's what happens, that the generation who was supposed to go into the land, we already read in last week's parasha, Noisim Anachnu, we're going, it's 3 days' journey, we're about to go there, and they're not going to go. And that's the outcome of the story. That's how Rashi reads it. Now, there's a very long, well-known Ramban at the beginning of the parasha, and the Ramban, first of all, is of the opinion that sending scouts to investigate the land is quite normal. There's nothing wrong with that at all. And in principle, there's no issue with it at all. He says, what Israel wanted was like anyone who was going to try to make war against a foreign land. They would send scouts, spies, if you like, ahead of them, the das had the rochim, to know the way. It's not whether to conquer the land, which is the assumption that Rashi and the Midrash makes, it's how. Obviously we're going, it's just a question of common sense. Send some scouts, find out the weakest points, go and determine which cities are easiest to conquer, what the border's like, which routes offer the best cover, and so on and so forth. Effectively determine the military strategy that we appropriate to conquer the land. And he says, "V'zoitza haguna, b'chol kovshe arotzos." This is an appropriate strategy for all those who are conquering lands. V'chein osa oid Moshe atzmoi. And Moshe did himself. A bit later on, v'yishlach Moshe l'ragelis yazeh. Moshe himself sent scouts, the ragel, means to work out the right strategy in the wars in the Transjordan that are recorded a bit later on. Chayim Yeshua and so on and so forth. So the question really then, what's the problem? There's no problem, according to the Ramban, of determining how to take the land, because it's predicated on the assumption that the land is already good. And Moshe, as it were, agrees on the understanding that they're not trying to work out what to do, either whether to go to the land at all, but what's the best way to take it. As the Ramban continues, he said, we know it's good, but seeing that it's good, getting direct edus that it's good, will make them even more enthusiastic about taking it. And that's a good thing. And in this regard, the Ramban says that Moshe did not really consult with the Kodesh Baruch, but it just seemed like a good thing. It's the right way to do things. Moshe approved of their request. Kodesh Baruch approved. But then, What starts to seep in is really an alternative, that they interpret the information in the wrong way. There's a Megias, it's a very interesting. There are many Midrashim which discuss what exactly goes wrong, what's their motivation. It seems the normal understanding is that they are at liberty to interpret the information they find in the land in different ways. They find that the cities are indeed fortified, the people are huge, and the fruit the land grows is unnaturally large. So there are two ways of interpreting that information. One is that we can't go there. Look, we're just puny, we're like grasshoppers, it's hopeless. Another is the following, that if this is what the land can produce, when idolaters live in it, whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu was already promised will be expelled from the land, think what we could do with it. Think of the physical and spiritual benefits we could reap of living in this land. So even though the information was accurately reported, what prompted them to interpret different ways is really inside from the main shir. There is a Zohar HaKadosh, which is really should be read as a midrash, and it talks about the fact that the Meraglim, if you look at who they are men of renown, as the text says. These are people who are current leaders, and they suffer from what Gajar doesn't use this phrase, but we might call it in modern parlance, post-war Churchill syndrome. By which I mean that Churchill is the great war leader, leading through the wars, the coalition, and succeeds in fighting off the enemy, and as soon as the war's over, they get rid of him and replace him with someone else, whom they consider to be more appropriate to lead the post-war world. The Meraglim have a sense that they are desert leaders. They are people who know that their strengths lie, if you like, in the spiritual realm, and they are currently Kulan Amoshim. They are people of renown. But they also realise that when they go into the land, they will have to fight wolves, set up agricultural structures, ensure they can live off the land. At the moment, the food drops from the sky. When they go into the land, they're going to have to grow crops, fight off the enemy, deal with all kinds of practical complexities for which they are not best skilled. And they already realise, perhaps subconsciously, and the Zohar Kodesh in these types of texts usually deals with subconscious motivation. What it's saying is, they have a sense that they're going to lose their leadership roles. And as I was saying, so what motivates them to interpret the huge fruit as, it's a disaster, we're never going to be able to go there, rather than, wow, look at these fruits that we could produce in the land, look what we could make of it, it's the underlying Megias, the recognition that they're going to lose their role, and what they should have been capable of doing was overcoming that and recognising that if the new leaders are required for the new faith in Jewish history, it's on Zion, that's how it should be. And that's just an interesting aside. So what's underlined here is that there are two layers. On the one hand, what they're saying, or even thinking, perhaps convincing themselves, is that the reason they want to scout out the land is just to determine how to take it. But really they're trying, perhaps even they're not self-aware enough to recognise, that what they're really promoting is a cascade of involvement which will eventually result in them doubting whether to take it. But the Zohar is identifying the Negias that may have produced that in the first place. Okay, so that's kind of introductory to get some background. To explore some other ideas in the parsha and to get a deeper sense, or let's say a more unusual sense, that's the espionage bit of this rather bizarre title. But I also promised an Ishbitz look at the parsha as well. But to do that, we need some more Rambam. After the episode, this rather sorry episode of the Meraglim concludes, we then have some parshias of apparently entirely unrelated ideas. The first, Ki sovoyo el eretz moshvo seichem asher ani noisei lochem v'azisei mishel Hashem oylo ozevach lefalei nede, it's also going to bring korbonos or on Yom Tov and so on. Vehikriva makriv korvona Hashem minchas soiles istorin bolul v'reviyasahin shomen v'yayin lanesach reviyasahin. So it tells you that when you bring korbonas, you have to bring together with the korban a mincha and a nesach. a flower offering and a wine libation. Then you have Parshat Challah, and then it goes on to talk about Avodah Zorah, and later on in the Parsha you've got the Mekoshesh and Tzitzis. It seems to be a jumble of different material. So both the Ramban and the Sforno are particularly interested in the juxtaposition of the Maisa of the Meraglim to the Parshas that follow immediately, specifically the Nesochim. So the Ramban, Challah and Nesochim, Menachos and so on, what's all this about? So the Ramban famously says as follows, it's a kind of consolation. Ahashivtiach es habonim shavoy la'oretz. You have to get into the mindset of the generation who are now facing 38 or so further years in the desert. How are they thinking? Well, what's happened now? They've been promised, okay, the generation who are supposed to go to the land now will not. They will die out over the next 40 odd years in the desert. And their children, the next generation, will take the land. So, the Ramban says, why is then we put this here? Because if you think about it, they're going to say, you know what? Every time it looks like things are good, it goes wrong. And that cycle will just repeat. And you know what will happen is, we won't make it either, and it's just going to go on and on forever, and we will never get to the promised land. So therefore, says the Ramban, in order to console them, or to ensure they don't think in this self-destructive way, which will inevitably lead to the very cycle that they're trying to avoid. Hishlim lehem Torah ha-korbonos, shakrivu nesochim b'voyim la'oretz. The Torah, at this point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu elects to complete the dinim of the korbonos, to tell that they're telling they're going to, what's the key thing, is not so much the fact they'll bring the nesochim, but it's b'voyim la'oretz. It's going to happen when they go to the land. So the Ramban suggests that perhaps this is recorded now, to comfort them and to assure them, because they were despairing and they were saying, who knows what's going to happen after an extended period, particularly after the end of 40 years. So you know what's going to happen? They sinned. We, the next generation, will sin as well. Lekach roa kodesh baruch hu nachman. Therefore, God saw fit to comfort them with this parasha. Kivat savoy soy som. The mitzvahs are oret. By promising the mitzvahs hatzoluyas bo oret. Mitzvahs which are entirely contingent on the land. They gave a sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is saying that my objectives for you cannot be fulfilled except in the land, and therefore they would feel that, okay, things have gone wrong this time, but we will actually make it into the land to fulfill these requirements. God assured them that it was revealed before him, that he could see, as it were, with his atemporal view of the universe, that he can see ahead, you will go. It's a promise. So that's the famous, it's a well-known Ramban. I think the Ramban, the understanding of this parasha is especially important to make sure we properly comprehend it. So the Sforno gives a rather cryptic discussion, which talks about, if you like, phases of connection with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, which really merits an entire shiur, but we mentioned in passing. The Sforno says, until the Chet HaEgel, Hoyah korban reich nechoyet mezuras minchon sochim, the korban was acceptable on its own. It didn't require the mincha, and it didn't require the nesoch and the libations with it. And he explains, he gives various previous examples, Hevel, Noach, the korbonos that are mentioned at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, and Matan Torah, and so on. Ubechetim be'egel, but when they did the egel, which we assume means they somehow were more distant, and a more, let's say, more complex korban is required to have the same outcome. Hitzrich mincha nesochim la'olas hatomid. Then it became necessary for the olas hatomid, for the daily public korban, to be accompanied by a mincha and by nesochim. She korban sibur. But now things have worsened again. Shechotu b'meraglim. Now things have gone wrong with the Meraglim. There's a further stage. Hitzrich mincha nesochim lahachshir gam korban yochid. that the individual korban will also require it. So there are various interpretations. Some of the Hasidic Sforim are quite keen on this idea, looking at different phases of connection and how the original, if you like, desired degree of connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is recreated by first the addition of the Mincha and the Nesachim to the Korban Sibur, and then it's their addition to the Korban Yochid. So we're just saying that's another way of understanding why the Parsha of Mincha and the Nesachim appears immediately after the section of the Meraglim. But so that's introductory. But of course, what this doesn't do, what neither of these Rishonim do, is actually suggest why it should be this din. It could, according to the Ramban, it could have been any din that could only be observed in the land, any of the mitzvahs hatzluyos for Oretz. According to the Sforno, it's important it's these things, but he doesn't explain why. So in my examination of some slightly more unusual texts, I found that the Ishbitzer school has got a whole kind of way of looking at this. In the second chelik of the Me'ah Shalev of the Ishbitzer, which although was written, Ishbitzer died in 1854, so it was written in the first half of the 19th century, it wasn't published until the 1920s.
What wasn't published?
The second chelik of the Me'ah Shalach of the Ishbitzer was not published until the 1920s. He offers what initially appears to be a rather entertaining answer. He gives a psychological perspective on the relationship, clearly drawing on the Ramban, of between depression and alcohol use. Here we have a parsha din in the Sochim about wine. He said, and wine is being recommended as a religious responsibility for people who are probably a bit miserable. And he explores that relationship. It's quite the name of the modern, quite postmodern, and so on. So he says, he wonders why, Acha Parshas Meraglim Ksiv Parshas Nesachim. It's the question that the Ramban asks. Why is a Parsha of Nesachim immediately following the Parsha of the Meraglim? Hainu, Acha Shirah Shem Yisparach Es Goydel Merirus Libon. Kodesh Baruch Hu saw how embittered they were. Presumably, this embitterment is a self-loathing. I can't believe what we did. When they look back over what they did, how stupid they were. How what they had almost in their grasp and they lost it, and the world and the whole of Jewish history would have been entirely different had they been able to go into the land at that point. And they look back and they feel embittered. Achamai semaraglim, lochein nosel lehem parshas nesachim. Lachris is nafshon. Kodesh Baruch Hu gave them the nesachim to cheer them up. It's a kind of Hasidic way of understanding things. As nafshon v'libom, their spirits and hearts, Hanimror, which are embittered. And he quotes various psukim to support it. And the psukim, importantly, Lecho echo besimcha lachmecho. It's a question of simcha. So what's he saying? Hainu, a little bit more of this. Mishahu bo'oitiv muriz v'shosi yayin. Someone who is feeling a little down. Bo'oitiv muriz v'shosi yayin, and he drinks wine. Sha'al yidei zeh yischazek leboi. And through there he strengthens his heart. V'yelo leiv toiv. And it will result in him having a lev tov. And I'm sure that psychologists or modern therapists dealing with addictions will be able to relate to this very well. Then he says, mutar lishtos. For such a person, if he feels just, you know, a little kind of, you know, a little l'chaim will sort of work, then that's okay. Aval misha shosei yayin v'soich domoi lichos. But someone who is angry and someone who is filled with kind of desperation, it makes things worse. Humida maguna ma'oid. This is an exceptionally bad trait. The zed leka midid benavia de lo remiza ve'eraisa. And this is something where we can say there is nothing in the Nevi'im, because he says the psukim, as Posca Mishle, the yain and mari nefesh. How it's a reference. He said nothing that appears in the Nevi'im doesn't have some kind of hint in the Torah. And then he goes on a bit of a digression, which we don't have time to discuss. So the Ishbitzer's first attempt is that, at a rather sort of psychological level, the Torah is allowing you to explore the relationship between wine, alcohol, and, if you like, this kind of depressive state. And he makes various suggestions and recommendations. However, What happens in the next generation, the Beis Yaakov of Ishbitz, of Yaakov Lehner, also has a piece on this, and he introduces an idea from the Zohar HaKadosh and Parshas Mishpatim. And this idea is developed into the most peculiar idea. It's the idea of the court jester. Is that what I called it in the title? Yes, the court jester. Now, this phrase actually appears in the Lashon of the Zohar. It's Badchana de Malko. But I think that's a good translation. A Badchan is a jester. And a Badchana de Malko is the Aramaic phrase for court jester. So what's a court jester got to do with this? So Yaakov Lehner introduces the idea, and then we're going to look at what his son, the Baal HaTechelis, has to say about it. So, Achakach, Nisan Lehem Parshat Nesachim, this is the Beis Yaakov of Ishbitz, V'chalo Parshat Avodah Zarah. So, he has a much bigger piece, and he discusses the relationship between all the Parshas, but I'm particularly interested in the Parsha of Nesachim, which is the one that the Rishonim focus on. Why? Nesachim Moira. Nesachim indicates, Sheskimu Liyos Munotzchim Me'es HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They agreed to be vanquished by God. And this is where you see what is a very, just a brief aside, for those who are not familiar, the Ishbitz school got itself into enormous controversy. No one would publish the Nashalach in the 1850s, because he says things about biblical narratives, we've mentioned before in this forum, which appear to be not just subversive, but actually outrageous. He often turns the heroes into fools, and more importantly, he often turns the villains into heroes. By recasting the story, the reason he does this, the Ishbitz school, the Ishbitzers do this, is because they have an essentially deterministic view of the Torah. And that means that if people who are recording the Torah act in a particular way, it must be with some positive motivation, even though you can't see it. So even famously Zimri, he turns into a hero. That piece was not printed in every edition, because it was considered to be so outrageous, and it was torn out of others. So here he's doing the same thing, in case of Beis Yaakov, that he said they agree to be vanquished by God. And we're going to elaborate in a minute. And thereby brought joy to God. And this is why the parsha of Nesachim, wine and joyfulness, is mentioned afterwards. Just as David HaMelech is referred to in the Zohar, Badchana de Malko. The context of this phrase in the Zohar is that David HaMelech appears to do certain things against his character, things which, for which he is harshly criticised, even in Tanakh, and certainly by later Jewish history. And the Zohar, with its very Kabbalistic perspective, really can't quite bring itself to believe that David HaMelech did these things by accident. So it suggests he did them deliberately, knowing that he would be made a fool of by them. That's what it means to be the court jester. What does the jester do? He turns up wearing a silly hat, saying stupid things, effectively making a fool of himself. Why? For the pleasure of the king. That's what Badchana de Malka means in the Lashon HaZohar. And the Ishbitzer borrows this phrase, seems to be rather controversially. He borrows this phrase to describe what's going on with the story of the Meraglim, and he learns that from the juxtaposition to the Nesachim. What's the court jester? So he discusses a little bit, but it becomes a much more elaborate thesis in the next generation. The son of the Beis Yaakov Ishbitz is the most famous of them all, the Baal HaTechelis, who wrote the Sidra Taro, who was the Reb Gershon Henoch Lehner, very well known for all sorts of things, but he also wrote a series of quite esoteric sforim on the parashas of Yom Tovim called Sod Yesharim. And in the Sod Yesharim, he takes the idea that his father has suggested, and he says the following, and this is the idea of the court jester. I'm not really promoting this as a normative explanation, but it's at least succeeding in keeping some of you awake. Okay. Right. The lonely son. Now, he quotes his father, and he quotes the Midrash, and he quotes the problem that has already arisen in the thinking of the Rishonim, how to deal with the juxtaposition between the Parshas, and he uses that to contextualize the whole thing. Wine is about Simcha. Why is a passage about Simcha demanding Simcha in Avodah immediately following the passage of the Meraglim? And the answer is takes with his father, and here, it's pretty outrageous, but it's very interesting. Keep a Shoresh. He said, what was the real kavona, alpi kabola, of the Meraglim? We understand that Megillus, even quotes the Zohar to that effect about Megillus. We discussed the machlokes between Rashi and the Rambans, exactly what, whether it was right, what was wrong about it, what was the objective, what was the stated objective, what was the real objective. Gibeshoyeresh kivnu hamaraglim es oimek rutsoinu yisborach. Because in reality, the Meraglim were able to tune in to the true, real, if you like, deeper will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kamosha Omru L'Avram Avinu, because the Pasuk had already been said to Avram Avinu, V'doi Revi Yeshuv V'Heinu. He said, if you look very closely in the text, and I think he elaborates on this, you can see that it was destined that they would not enter the land until 40 years had passed. There's a Sifri about this, there are other texts about this. That although it looks in the story as though Kodesh Baruch Hu wants them to go into the land now, really, there's a mechanism which has to be put in place to make sure that doesn't happen, because while the stated will is to go now, what he calls the Omek Rutsoyna Yisborach, the real, profound will of the Divine, is that there will be a delay and they shouldn't go until the destined time, which is another 40 years on. And the Meraglim, according to this reading, are aware of this, and they are willing to play a game, i.e. to be the court jesters, to play a game in order to allow Kodesh Baruch Hu to play out his rotzen through them. And so I told you it's outrageous. The MS, ha'ibicholtum l'shaber esa'oretz. They were capable of praising the land. It's not how we were taught the story. My daughters say to me, we don't want to hear what the Ishvitz has to say about it, because it's the opposite of everything we were ever taught in school. So like, right, they were capable of praising it. He's suggesting they made an informed choice to do something which would result in them being reviled by history. It even resulted in their own deaths. And yet, it has achieved something for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and as such, they become the Bat Chana de Malka. Rak shenin sabina ba'omek livom mi'ito yisbrok. They had some sense, some understanding. Bina means some intuition, perhaps, in the depths of their heart. Lechaven el harotzen lignoises oretz. That really, what a Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to do was exactly what they did. The nitzol lehem parshas nesachim, and the parsha of nesachim is given, as it were, to them. To acknowledge, despite the fact in the previous passage they are reviled, criticized, and actually die in some horrible way, they get the parsha of the Nesachim. L'rames shehem bat chana de malka, to hint to them that they are the bat chana de malka. It's a very, very subversive reading. A very subversive reading, and that is why the shit is called Espionage and the Court Jester and the Ishmael's approach to the Meraglim. A little bit, it's a very long piece, and I've got a bit on the page here, but it's only a small piece of a longer essay. One thing he was not big on was brevity. V'zeh inyad bar chana de malka. And this is perhaps, it wasn't some kind of limud. Shemuskum levazois atzmoi bishvil l'samech esamelech. One has to be willing to make a fool of oneself. He says, levazos atzmo means to deprecate oneself in order to make the king rejoice. And of course, there's all kinds of subversive undercurrents in this. Why do you need to read it like this? Why can't they just be what we think? They're people who go wrong, who make an error, who should have known better. Or even if you take the Zoharic perspective, that there was an Agias, which perhaps they aren't aware of, that they would lose their leadership. We found that quite a plausible explanation, certainly. I've been teaching this idea for years, that the Zohar's understanding, that Zoharic Midrash, really does actually speak very well. And it's very interesting, just to add to that. So the Shemesh Shmuel Sofichov says on that, this is why Yeshua is concerned for himself as well. He needs the extra hay in his name to help him out. Why? Because he has the same Megillus. It's the other way round. He knows if they go into the land, Moshe Rabbeinu will not be the leader, and he will become the leader. So he has the same Megillus, it's the other way around. He's worried he'll fall into the same trap. But not because he'll lose his leadership, but because he'll get it. It's an interesting twist on the Zohar. The point of the Shia is to look at things from a different perspective. How a very, very creative set of thinkers in the later 19th century take this issue raised by the Ramban and turn it into a kind of subversive art form. But I suppose the end of the story is what he is advocating is that in a world where you can't, or you become incapable of reading the stories at the simple level. That's one of the reasons why the Ishbitzers were criticised. People didn't like the way they read things. It was very, nothing is, if you have a world in which nothing is as it seems, where do you go with that? But apart from the kind of conceptual difficulties that it raises, what it's suggesting is that at a deeper level, people of the calibre of David HaMelech were willing, if appropriate, to be the Bat Chana de Malka. That even though they suffered as a result, to bring joy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though one might not understand why it has to happen this way, is perhaps at some level the deepest madriga of Hashem. Have a good day.